In the late summer of 1777, British troops under the command of General John Burgoyne were heading south from Canada along the Champlain Valley. Their objective, Albany, New York. The original plan called for a three-prong offensive by the British, with General Burgoyne to move south, Lieutenant Colonel Barry St. Ledger to move east from Fort Oswego, and General William Howe to move north from New York City. Unfortunately for the British, St. Ledger only got as far as Fort Stanwix when his combined troops of 1,700 regulars, Tories, and Indians were defeated by the defenders of the fort who refused to surrender. In General Howe's case, his previous orders called for him to take Philadelphia, and he was already on the move. This left Burgoyne alone to proceed to Albany. After a skirmish at Hubbardton, Vermont, he was desperately low on supplies. On August 11th, the detachment whose mission was to obtain supplies, food, forage, and horses for Burgoyne's army began its march. They headed toward Bennington, where Burgoyne had been informed a large cache of stores were on hand and guarded by a small militia. Under the command of Lieutenant Colonel Friedrich Baum, the forces numbered 650 men composed of dismounted dragoons, grenadiers, and light infantry, plus a percentage of Tories, Canadians, Indians, and the usual camp followers. General Burgoyne was unaware that General John Stark from New Hampshire was mustering colonial troops in Bennington. Called out of voluntary retirement, Stark would accept a commission only if he would be independent of the Continental Army and given the authority to act as an independent command. On the 13th of August, having received information that Burgoyne had dispatched troops toward Bennington, Stark sent Colonel William Gregg out on a reconnaissance mission along the Walloomsack. At Sancoit Mill, Baum had his first contact with organized colonial troops. With Gregg looking on early in the morning of the 14th, a skirmish broke out between the two opposing forces. General Stark writes,
"I sent Colonel Gregg of my brigade to stop them. In the night, I was informed by express that there was a large body of the enemy on the march. I rallied all my brigade and what militia was at Bennington. I likewise sent to Manchester to Colonel Seth Warner's regiment that was stationed there. I also sent expresses for the militia to come from other places with all speed to our assistance. I then marched in company with all the men that were present." About 5 miles from Bennington, I met Colonel Gregg on his retreat and the enemy in pursuit after him.
Baum's larger and more organized forces were obviously more than Gregg was prepared to handle. When Baum's scouts brought information of a much larger force ahead, he sent to Burgoyne for reinforcements. While Baum and his men continued their move toward Bennington, Burgoyne dispatched Colonel Heinrich von Bremen to aid him. Not realizing the extent of the buildup of the colonial forces now going on in the Bennington area, von Bremen did not see the need to move at full speed. On his second day out, he ran into inclement weather and bad roads. His lack of haste would prove to be a fatal mistake. By noon, Baum was arriving at his first main position for the upcoming battle. Aware of the advancing forces, General Stark conferred with his officers and decided to meet the oncoming army before they had a chance to get any closer to Bennington. Baum's Indian scouts, traveling far in advance of his troops, had caused him trouble from the very beginning of his march. Instead of rounding up cattle for food for the army, they slaughtered the animals just for the cowbells. Stories of these and other atrocities by his Indians terrified area residents and helped swell the ranks of militiamen under Stark. Stark found Baum and his men entrenched in their redoubts along the Walloomsack.
Lights. Neil Sogrick, Port of Engage. school and for Cornigan. Harrigan. Then Cleve, Coast, Adun.
Stark began encircling Baum's positions, sending Colonel Benjamin Nichols to the north with his men from New Hampshire, and Colonels David Hobart and Thomas Stickney to capture Tory positions south of the bridge that crossed the Valoomsack. Colonel Sam Herrick and his Vermont Rangers and Bennington Militia swept south of the Tory outpost on a wide arc, largely hidden by woods, and recrossed the river a couple of miles west of Baum's position. They were able to come up at Baum's rear completely unobserved. Stark was to attack from the front. At 3 in the afternoon of August 16th, everyone was in place. Herrick, Nichols, Stark, Hobart, and Stickney, and unknown to everyone, Colonel Seth Warner with his Green Mountain Boys were moving down from Manchester. As the two opposing forces faced one another, Stark brought his men up to the main front position. The British were waiting for the attack. Nichols' battalion fired the first shots. Next, some of Herrick's men started firing. The British returned the fire as they tried to determine what the Colonials' battle strategy would be. Stark now moved his men around into position. The British fired into his ranks. One of Stark's men was down. The first of many dead and wounded that would occur on this historic day. The battle continued with both armies firing back and forth, neither giving any ground. Baum still held on to his position in the redoubt. The Colonials stood fast in front of him. Off to Baum's left flank, he had one of his cannons moved into position. The firing between the Colonials and the British continued at a furious pace, but slowly the Colonials were moving closer to Baum's position. Then suddenly, some of Stark's men tried to overrun the cannon, but were repulsed. Baum's redoubt was now under heavy fire, and his men started to retreat. His slow-firing cannons were no match for the determined Colonials, who would not give up an inch of hard-won ground. Wounded. wounded and his positions practically surrounded, his troops were now in full rout, and the colonial forces moved in. They celebrated their well-earned victory. But as what remained of Baum's men headed back west into the security of General Burgoyne's army, Colonel von Bremen's reinforcements were now arriving on the scene, unfortunately too late to save Colonel Baum. The Colonials, not knowing yet about the reinforcements, thought they had won the day. Again, General Stark writes,
"I then gave orders to rally again in order to secure the victory, but in a few minutes was informed that there was a large reinforcement sent by General John Burgoyne on the march within 2 miles. Lucky for us, that moment Colonel Seth Warner's regiment came up fresh, marched on, and began the attack. I pushed forward as many of the men as I could to their assistance. The battle continued obstinate on both sides till sunset."
And so what was now the second battle of the day raged on. Colonel von Bremen was to comment later, "I was completely unaware of Baum's defeat when we approached the battle area. I did not hear a single shot fired, either from small arms or cannon." The timely arrival of Warner's fresh troops slowed von Bremen's advance, who now commanded a high ridge. Though Stark and Warner had the much larger force, von Bremen's position gave him the advantage. But slowly he was losing this advantage as his casualties mounted and ammunition ran low. As the Colonials started to surround von Bremen, he had no choice but to order a withdrawal. His men started moving off the ridge with their camp followers and the walking wounded. Von Bremen looked on as Stark slowly advanced toward his position. Thinking he may still be able to hold on, some of his men continued the fight when suddenly Warner's Green Mountain boys appeared at the top of the ridge and forced them down the hill. They continued their retreat and disappeared into the brush. The Battle of Bennington was over. As the dead and wounded lay scattered about the battlefield, the wives and mistresses who followed the troops also served as nurses when the battle ended. Mortally wounded, both Colonel Baum and Colonel Francis Pfister, commander of the Tory Brigade, were taken to David Matthews' house, where they died that night. As the Colonial troops started their triumphant march back to Bennington, General Stark wrote,
Had day lasted an hour longer, we should have taken the whole body of them. We took about 700 prisoners, 207 dead on the spot. That part of the enemy that made their escape marched all night, and we returned to our camp. Our loss was inconsiderable, about 40 wounded and 30 killed.
The Battle of Bennington was of no small consequence. The mostly untrained colonial forces had overwhelmingly defeated some of Europe's best trained, disciplined, and equipped troops. Burgoyne and Baum had fatally underestimated the strength of their enemy. The Americans' valuable stock of stores and supplies had been saved, and Burgoyne's ambitious plan for a quick march to Albany had been halted. 2 months later, he would surrender his entire command of 8,000 troops following the Battle of Saratoga, which resulted in a major turning point for the American Revolution. When the British wounded were returned to Bennington, the enlisted men were housed in the old First Church. The original having burned down, it was rebuilt in 1805 and still stands today. The adjoining cemetery is now the final resting place for many of the participants of the battle, both British and American. The Catamount Tavern was on this site and used for the wounded British officers. The objective of the battle was the storehouse that stood on this site and also is remembered to this day by the Bennington Battle Monument, a stone monolith 306 feet tall on the same site. The Colonel Seth Warner statue remains a tribute to the hero of the battle who brought in his Green Mountain Boys and saved the day.